Today, lessons as Kiwis see inflation up but home prices down. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, there's more evidence today that New Zealand is on a different economic path to Australia. Today we got the CPI inflation data, which showed that New Zealand inflation lifted further in the second quarter to 2.7%. This means that inflation is already at the peak the Reserve Bank forecast in its May monetary policy statement. And this confirms the Reserve Bank's decision to hold the official cash rate earlier in the month, and despite the weakening economic conditions, of course, and falling home prices as well. Referring to the CPI data, ASB noted that while the result is an unwelcome development after New Zealand endured years of high interest rates to tame rampant inflation, the last thing New Zealanders and the Reserve Bank of New Zealand need right now is the prospect of inflation reinvigorating and crimping the extent to which the Reserve Bank of New Zealand can cut interest rates and stimulate the fledgling economic recovery. Now, it's worth noting that rising food costs are partially responsible for the lift in the CPI. Every major burger ingredient has shot up in price. The inclusion of vegetables in the ingredients list is slightly aspirational. The reasons for the price increases have varied and follow a period where food prices were falling back after their post-COVID jump. Household energy costs have also risen sharply, in part through higher transmission line charges, whereas construction costs dropped over the quarter and fuel prices eased back further. More broadly, tradable inflation has rebounded into positive territory after a period of falling prices that did much to drag overall inflation down from its 7% plus peak. The return to a more normal pace of modest but positive tradable price inflation means still high non-tradable inflation is no longer being offset, ASB said. And it's worth recalling that during the COVID-19 pandemic, New Zealand experienced one of the world's largest house price booms, which pushed median home values to a record 11.2 times median income levels. That's according to Demographia. Since then, New Zealand has experienced one of the world's biggest housing crashes, which has significantly improved the nation's housing affordability. The core factors driving this behaviour is a sharp reduction in migration, controls on lending for property investors, and a higher path to the cash rate in the attempt to crush inflation. New Zealand tackled the demand side of the property conundrum, leading to a sharp decline in prices, which has dramatically improved housing affordability. But of course, New Zealand also had a recession. To underscore the impact, last week the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand released the house price index for June, which declined by 0.3%. They said that although there had been an increase in the number of sales compared to June 2024, median prices of New Zealand remained unchanged and listings across the country declined. The median price for New Zealand was steady year on year at $770,000, but excluding Auckland, the median price increased by 1.7% year on year to reach $691,500, while Auckland experienced a further decline year on year, decreasing by 3.4% to $990,000. 10 out of the 16 regions reported an increase in median prices compared to June 2024. The most significant increase was seen on the West Coast, up 35.5% from $310,000 to $420,000. Southland reached a record high in its median price, reaching $502,500. That's the first record median price in any region since January. We're seeing a market that is steady on the surface, but with some movement underneath at a regional level. The unchanged national median price suggests stability, yet this reflects contrasting regional dynamics, with some areas experiencing renewed growth year on year, the REIZ chief executive Lizzie Riley said. Number of properties sold across the country increased by 20.3% year on year, increasing from 4,877 to 5,865, when excluding Auckland, sales increased by 21.4% from 3,371 to 4,091. Looking to the regions, the highest year-on-year increases were recorded in Gisborne, which saw a 70% increase from 20 to 34 sales. And other regions with notable sales increases included Southland, up 34.9%, the Bay of Plenty, up 33.3%, and Marlborough, up 32.7%. June is typically a quieter month for real estate, and while the seasonal slowdown was expected, sales came in slightly below typical early winter levels, they said. Nationally, seasonally adjusted sales fell by around 5%, suggesting some caution in the market, but compared to this time last year, sales remained significantly stronger overall, they said. Looking at properties coming to market, New Zealand saw a 2.5% decline in listings compared to June 2024, totaling 7,612 listings. Excluding Auckland, there was also a decrease in listings, down 3.3% to 4,700. Inventory levels across the country, however, continue to rise, increasing by 2% year on year to 32,384 properties available for sale. Nationally, there were 676 auction sales reported in June, representing 11.5% of all sales for New Zealand. Excluding Auckland, there were 315 auction sales, which were 7.7% of all sales. The median number of days to sell for New Zealand increased by 3 days to 50 days, and excluding Auckland, it rose by 4 days to also reach a median of 50 days as well. While properties are still selling, the increase in median days to sell indicates that buyers are taking a more considered approach. This shift probably reflects a broader sense of caution, with many buyers feeling they have the time to explore their options, especially with the amount of choice they have, the REINZ said. Most vendors are entering the market with realistic price expectations and the willingness to adapt to current conditions, especially those motivated to sell. However, many are receiving offers below their anticipated value, prompting some delay to list or relist until spring or summer, when market activity may show signs of improvement. The House Price Index, the HPI for New Zealand, is currently at 3,580. That shows a year-on-year increase of 0.3% and a decrease of 0.8% compared to May 2025. Over the past 5 years, the average annual growth rate of the New Zealand HPI has been 3.9%, but of course it's dropped recently. So in summary, prices have crashed across all major markets in New Zealand, and when adjusted for inflation, real house prices have collapsed to pre-pandemic levels. The benefit of all this is that the ratio of dwelling prices to income in New Zealand has also returned to pre-pandemic levels, and mortgage repayment affordability also improved materially, reflecting lower home prices and mortgage rates. Ahead, ASB still expects the Reserve Bank to cut the official cash rate in August by 25 basis points, owing to the weak economy and growing spare capacity. That said, the official cash rate outlook remains in a push-me, pull-me state, they said. Risks of spillover from the current inflation spike against the risk of weaker inflation pressures from any short-term stalling in economic recovery or tariff impacts. But in Australia, politicians have actively stimulated home prices through demand-side stimulatory policies, such as the Albanese government's 5% deposit scheme for first-time buyers, the expansion of the Help to Buy shared equity scheme, changes to lending rules that prohibit banks from including student debts in loan serviceability assessments, and various state government policies. So here, inflation is still a problem, but it's made worse by home prices and rents rising fast. As Alex Joyner put it on X, it was a poor situation leading to COVID, and then house prices rose sharply due to zero interest rates through that period. This is one of the seemingly unspoken costs of the pandemic, at least for those that aspire to home ownership. He also makes the point that household income definitions have evolved from a one-income household to two in most cases. It is very well known, of course, that the median income can't buy the median house. So my point is this. Policy choices make a huge difference. Australia has made a series of really bad choices, and we're now reaping the whirlwind across the ditch. There are lessons we need to learn, because there are consequences to such policy decisions, and our politicians need to be held to account. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.